kind of boring through the decaying wood, and the larva is actually, you know, making kind of a disc from the excrement. Yeah. Gempilodonts is another kind of a variation on the theme on the long colidids, again living in galleries of platypodids, and especially we know that from the Australian genus Pseudendestes that has been reared there. And but there is no again argument that they've been actually feeding on the eggs or the larvae, maybe a little bit, but not that much. This is widely spread tribe. There is a lot of genera in Africa. There is only one genus in New World, actually, and there is several genera in Indonesia, and it's coming up to Australia, to the northern Queensland. The real exciting group are the Acropinae. This is another group which is completely New World, and is basically their species. This is another project that I and Mike were supposed to do, and Ian was supposed to finish, and hopefully this will happen at some point. They've got the enormous eyes, especially in the genus Acropis, but they are just of great to the kind of a small and a little bit less appealing creatures. The very limited in distribution tribe Orthocerini. These are another things which are kind of living on the surfaces of the ground under lichens. They've got this beautiful beautiful sculpture and this antennae which are just completely throwing out. The larva looks like a normal colidid. There is nothing really peculiar about it, and it's definitely feeding on the lichens. And the largest group, which is absolutely diverse and almost impossible to characterize. We lump together several groups there, and we really don't know exactly what Syncytinae are. And usually when you pull out all those other tribes, what is left are Syncytinae. So this is the typical Syncyta. There's this, of course, Bitoma, and this is the Lascanotus. They are the most kind of easily recognized groups. And there are some good evidences that some of those, especially Lascanotus, including larvae and adults, are predaceous, living in ascolytic galleries. Those are fungivorous, and this is probably omnivorous, whatever it can give. There are such a diversity of those groups, and in some places like Australia or New Zealand, they just absolutely go berserk. There is such enormous speciation going on, that especially in New Zealand, that there is probably one of the most common groups that you collect when you sift litter. And the shapes of the body and they're all wingless. They get into a completely blind state as well. It's enormous, and it's really something which probably from New Zealand alone there is about 226 species described right now. So it's just enormous group there. But in all the Syncytinae, you can see there's the same trends. In terms of the body shape, so it could be cylindrical because they are living in the galleries. They could be flat and living under bark. They could live on the ground as well. So they have all this same permutation of characters that you see in other tribes. So that's why it's very difficult to characterize what the Syncytinae actually are. And this is just the last picture of a still undescribed genus species. We just got the cryptogams growing on top of it, and this is from Australia, but there is several species from New Guinea, and it's definitely flying, but apparently when there is a growth of these cryptogams, they just glue the elytra together, so the beetle just cannot fly, and that was actually investigated by Gressett and Alsamuelson in Papua New Guinea. Thank you very much. No. Well, this is just one of those characters that just seems to be coming and going all the time, and you can see that in many other groups as well. So there are some, what I've been like looking across all the beetles, there are some groups that are incredibly conservative. So like Coralophid that I'm talking about, they are tiny little creatures, but there is no single Coralophid known that has different formula, but 4-4-4. And you would expect with such a miniature body that you can get all out of like in Coccinellis. There's everything. You can have four segmented, three segmented going, forward and back. And that's one of those. And well, we can have all these cuckoo joys that the males have got 5-5-4. They just have it, and that's it. Now, I don't have any explanation, but it has to be a relatively simple mechanism, I think, in terms of a genetic, kind of a variation, because it's just all over the place.
Another question? Rob?
Eusagomorpha is known from like mid-elevation fungus associations, and yet a couple years ago, I found Eusagomorpha montanus deep in a very low elevation cave. That was an interesting find.
Okay.
I don't know what it's doing there.
That's very, very keen.
Yeah.
No, well, the problem is that we know very little about the biology of those beetles, and even they are kind of easy. Some of those are easy to collect, like Bitoma or something. Nobody really has bothered much into getting into biology. Burakovsky was the only person that has really put a lot of effort into rearing all these European colonies, and that's why we've got all this larvae and association, but it's very little known otherwise.
And most of you were probably at Mike's talk last night, but just to reiterate, the West Indies are those islands that are between North America and South America and are not on the continental shelf, and they include the limestone islands of the Bahamas and Turks and Caicos, the old rocky islands of the Greater Antilles, and the limestone and volcanic and islands of the Lesser Antilles. It excludes Florida, the ABCs, the Venezuelan islands, and Trinidad and Tobago. So what do we know about West Indian tanibs? Well, in 1984, Marcuse did a catalog of the West Indian tenebrionids, and he recorded 84 genera and 250 species. And in 1998, he updated this, recording 81 genera and 292 species. After a thorough search of the literature, I found that there are 85 genera and 397 species to date. And while a difference of 105 species sounds like an impressive increase of the known species in the West Indies, there have actually only been 17 newly described species since 1998. And so that just means that Marcuse missed the other 88 species in his catalog. Let's see. And I also counted that there are 595 island records. And what that means is for each species, whatever island it occurs, it gets an island record. So if it occurs on three islands, there's three island records for that species. And this number correlates to about 1.5 island records per species in the West Indies. To get a sense of what we don't know about tenebrionids in the West Indies, I went through our collection for a second time, and this is going to be things that we've collected, or Mike and others have collected, and but this is all unpublished. So what I found is that there's a one described genus that occurs in the West Indies that hasn't been recorded, 5 described species that are unrecorded, 209 new island records, 2 or more undescribed genera, and 63 plus undescribed species. So if you're looking for papers to write and publish, you can come to our collection and start describing things. And so we have a lot of things that we have, but it's not out there for people to know about it yet. And hopefully we can get that all done at some point, but we need more people and more people to work on this. So some patterns that I noticed of West Indian tenebrionids are that you have really widespread genera and then endemic species. So 64 of the 85 genera that occur in the West Indies also occur outside of the West Indies. But the opposite trend occurs in the species. 343 of the 397 species are endemic to the West Indies. If you look at Greater Antillean endemism, 67% of the species that occur on Cuba are endemic. 61% are endemic on Hispaniola, 65% in Jamaica, and only 27% in Puerto Rico. But the reason that Puerto Rico is probably so low is because there's a lot of, it's really poorly described in the first place, and the things that are not described are generally the endemics. So after looking at that, you can see that there's some trends that West Indian Tenebrianas generally follow. And here's just kind of a table of how we're going to look at the diversity today. So what we have is you have these introduced genera that come from wherever, and well, yeah, and you get, they're introduced by the agency of man. And then you have naturally widespread genera that either bring in species that remain widespread or they produce endemic species. And then you have the endemic genera. So those are kind of the distribution patterns we're going to look at. And then within those, there's kind of these three habitats that they're generally found in. And they're either fungus feeding externally, or the fungus is external, and then the beach, and they're either beach and soil inhabiting, and then they're either found under wood. Oh, and some interesting things to note here are just that the naturally widespread genera don't seem to produce many species that are endemic in this area in the fungus feeders, and then also the widespread species aren't inhabiting the wood. So let's start looking at these. Some introduced examples of introduced species. One is Diaperus maculata, and this is just sort of speculation at this point, but it's found on all of the major port islands in the West Indies, and so we think that maybe it's been introduced. But a definite example is Nitocerus maxillosus, and this species is found throughout the warmer parts of the world and has been introduced into Jamaica and Grenada. And just as a note here, I'm not going to read these distribution lists to you, but anything in blue are new records, and so those are things that I found just in the WIBF. An example of an introduced beach species is Trachycellus aphoideoides, and the first important thing to note about this is that it's not a scarab. Warren suspects that this arrived early in the colonial period, and it's been postulated for other soil insects. And this species can be very abundant. Warren has reported seeing dozens of these beetles in a single handful of sand. Hymenorus ferreus is kind of an exception to the Hymenorus rule. Hymenorus are generally naturally widespread with endemic species, but Hymenorus ferreus is thought by Warren to be spreading as a weed species throughout the West Indies. And there is also a bit of discrepancy between whether the species is wood inhabiting or beach inhabiting. Warren reports that its larvae are found or possibly found in sandy substrates, but Mike has told me that he's collected it beating and in rotten wood. So those two can battle that out later. A definite example of an introduced wood species is Pelorus cerulonides. According to Halstead, the genus Pelorus appears to be absent from the New World. However, there are a few species that do occur in the New World, but these are always associated with stored food products. And this species is probably of Indo-Malayan origin, but its wide distribution is probably due to commerce. Switching gears to the second distribution category of naturally widespread genera and species, Platydema is a good example of a really widespread genus. In fact, it occurs worldwide. Platydema excavatum and Platydema micans are also both widespread species. Platydema excavatum is easily recognized by its black color, shiny surface, and crenulate head. And Platydema micans is similar to excavatum but lacks the horns or tubercles on the head, and the elytrostriae are almost totally obliterated. According to Triplehorn and Watrous, filaria are found on beaches in many parts of the world. More than 60 species have been described, and catalogs indicate that they occur all over the continents except Australia and the polar regions. Filaria testacea is one of the most variable species of this genus in both size and color, and is also one of the most widely distributed species. Obotrynis is a widespread genus in the New World, occurring in eastern U.S., throughout the Caribbean, and in Central and South America. Yvonne revised this genus in 1995. From information where this species has been collected, it indicates that in the wild, Obotrynis clathratus occurs on sandy and rocky terrain, on beaches, river banks, in woods, and is widely distributed, throughout the Lesser Antilles. The Jamaica record was an interception in the U.S. with orchids, so it's probably not naturally occurring there. Moving on to the third distribution category of widespread genera with endemic species, Blapsinus is an example of a very widespread genus. However, it has several endemic species in the West Indies, including Blapsinus calique, which is endemic to San Salvador. Blapsinus calique belongs to a group of closely related species, including Blapsinus hatentius, which is endemic to Hispaniola. Dietis is another widespread genus with endemic species in the West Indies. There are currently two described species from the West Indies, Dietis debilis and Dietis guadalupensis. And here you can see that there's several new species, two from Cuba, one from Martinique, and two from Hispaniola. And I actually really like these. The first time I looked at them, I just saw that they're little brown beetles and didn't bother looking at them under a microscope. And then when I was getting ready for this talk, I was looking through them and I was like, oh wow, they have some pretty cool head structures. So they actually turned out to be a lot cooler than I thought. just because the wood inhabiting genera with endemic species are cool, here's another example. Tertius was originally described from Guatemala and Cuba, but is widespread throughout the warmer parts of the world. And these are five new species from Jamaica.